Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts as they share with you the insider's guide to property investing.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, your insider's guide to property investing. I'm Bryce Holdaway, the co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia, and he's Ben Kingsley, the chair of the Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the current Property Investment Advisor of the Year. Welcome, Ben.
Morning.
Now, we normally record this on a Friday morning, but today's Thursday. It's because you're going up to Sydney having a long lunch and a few afternoon beers, aren't you?
Oh, now. Board meeting for the Property Investment Professionals of Australia, so all the very smart and talented people that are on the board, we all get to meet 3 to 4 times a year and talk about the issues and obviously, you know, try and increase the professionalism of our members and the industry itself and obviously continue to protect consumers' interests. So we've got a lot to talk about at this board meeting, so it's going to be a good one.
Any sneaky insights into any sort of juicy topics you might be talking about?
Oh, negative gearing is going to be a juicy topic. So we're going to try and get that out into the media over the course of the next couple of weeks. Also, APRA's changes in terms of these are all impacts on our industry and obviously our members want us to put our message out there and get that message out to the broader community because we're having debates on this stuff. So it's really important that we put our message forward to the 1.8 million property investors who invest in property. We've got to look after them and look after the people who are trying to create a wealth outcome for their household without any market intervention or market manipulation, which obviously we're not so pleased about.
So maybe we can get a little sneak peek next week from whatever the conversation was. Maybe we could be the first to know what the PIPA board chatted about, but who knows? Maybe I won't put you on the spot for that. This week, we're going to talk about a decision that we think that most buyers are making in the back of their head, but we're going to give them a framework around what that looks like and kind of the science in property investing.
Yeah, it is. It's the science of the asset decision. Mm-hmm. So what we buy and where we buy. So I think this is one of the most crucial parts and it comes back to our ABCD. And for those of you who haven't listened to our podcast, make sure you start from episode one because that will give you the knowledge that you need to understand what we're talking about here in a more advanced level.
Agreed. So this I go through this decision quadrant. We call it the buyer's decision quadrant.
Correct.
On every single episode of the show because largely, you know, most of my professional life I'm dealing with property investors, but when I'm on the show I'm dealing with owner-occupiers. You're buying it with a lot of emotion, a lot of practical reasons, and they're going to go through one of these four decisions. And most people aren't blessed with not having to compromise at all in any of these four areas. So, mate, do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, I will. So the first one is cost. So, you know, unfortunately, most people think it's actually looking and we're programmed to search for areas first because that's how we look for property. But the reality is we have to have a budget. So when we are talking about the cost, we need to understand a few things. Firstly, we need to understand what does the household believe it can afford to buy today, but also sustain that asset over a period of time. I mean, one of the big things with property is it's very expensive to get in and it's very expensive to get out. So I use an example that when you're buying property, it's not just the 5%. So I'll give you an example of an investor sort of saying, this property is underperforming, should I sell it? Well, as someone who's doing their property plans every week, I'm sort of saying, look, that's a big decision because one, we've got 5% in. Then, okay, we've got to hold it for a year. We're going to have roughly 6% costs and interest. Then we've got selling costs of 2 to 3%. So all of a sudden, we're up to 13%. Then what's going to happen? Okay, well, we need to buy another property if we're going to replace that asset. So when we replace that asset, there's another 5% plus the 6% on top of that. So we're up to in excess of 20%. So a simple decision to sort of say, I'll flip a property is a decision that, you know, is really not thought out a lot by most investors. So coming back to the story of the budget, what we're trying to do is say, if you get it right, you'll be able to hold that asset for the long period, which gives you the joy of making sure that you're maximising what you can afford. But if you get it wrong, it means you may be forced to sell the property. So look at your current budget, understand that interest rates aren't going to stay as low as they are right now. And then finally, what are the changes that's going to happen in your household and your cash flow that's going to put pressure on being able to retain that asset? I love to think of property as a beautiful, big, heavy cab salve. And what I mean by that is, and that's a Cabernet Sauvignon drink, red wine, that if you get a big heavy Cab Sav and you open it in year one or year two, it's horrible drinking. Mm-hmm. But if you leave it for 10 or 15 years, it's mother's milk. Mm. So from that point of view, that's what we're trying to talk about here. It's about making sure that you can hold the asset for the long term.
Right, very good way of getting mother's milk into the conversation, I'm going to say. Okay, so the first part of the quadrant is price or cost.
Yep.
Second part is location. And if anyone's been listening to anything that we've been saying for the last 20 weeks...
What's the name of your show?
Well, exactly. Location, location, location. Australia, it's probably got the most syllables in Australian or perhaps the world television history. But location does 80% of the heavy lifting. So in our view, that is... not negotiable. Now, on the side of the show, when I'm buying for someone where they live, it is negotiable. It's part of the deal. You know, they can have to compromise somewhere. But if we're talking about investing, this is the non-negotiable quadrant.
Mm. Yeah, it's a tough one because, as we know, for those who have listened to the podcast before, 80% of your return, you know, usually comes from the area you buy. So location is king from a return on investment point of view.
Yeah, just a footnote to that. I had someone come and chat to me recently to say that they purchased an investment property that before they were about to go to contract, I said, stop, quick, give me a call. I want to have a quick chat with you. And he says, why is that? And I said, look, I think you've got the location right, but it does 80% of the heavy lifting. But if you actually buy the wrong asset, cancels it all out.
Yep.
And he goes, no, Bryce, I've got it under control. And I says, what do you mean? He says, I've bought it for the same price is what someone else bought it for 6 years ago. So therefore, I've bought really well and it's getting 6% yield. And I just thought, and I shook my head and thought, you know what, as much as I'd love to unpack that decision, if it hasn't grown in 6 years, there's probably, you know, the footnote to the story right there.
Yeah, and so for the listeners, there are some areas that if the whole area has underperformed and potentially the economic stimulus is occurring in that particular, so we're talking about regional cities here. So where you see a whole regional market soft or collapse, then there is going to be a time where timing the market and a buying opportunity presents itself. But when you're talking about an area like that particular client who I know what he bought, that area has been traveling beautifully. It's a inner city area or, you know, sort of 5 to 7 kilometres from a CBD. And it hasn't been performing when the overall market has. That's just like, oh my goodness, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing?
And the point in saying that too is because we're encouraging and hopefully giving knowledge to our listeners that location is critical, but it's also just a point, a point to say that it's not everything if you get the property wrong.
Yes. So that's right. It's a general phrase that 80% comes from the location. But yeah, if you're buying into medium or high density stock, that doesn't ring true. It's got to be low density or single dwelling stock to actually see that result occur. And here's the interesting part about location, Bryce, isn't it? As I was saying before, when we absolutely go to decide where we're going to buy, we're making that location decision and we're using the search engine tools like realestate.com, domain, real estate view, all of those types of things. So we're programmed to try and dream of that area. Now, as property investors, we're getting on the coattail of the owner-occupier buyer because they're the ones who pay emotional values for the properties, sustained emotional values. We're seeing very poor decisions being made by some investors in Sydney at the moment who are paying emotional investment prices for properties in medium and high density, and they're going to have their pants pulled down probably, you know, in the next 3 to 5 years where they're going to see losses occur on what they buy.
Ben, we talk about property all day, every day as part of our role and what we do in our business and also, you know, in the media. Sometimes it's easy to think in our position when we're, you know, the theory of you are the average of the five people that you hang out with the most.
Yeah.
And because if we average the five people that we hang out with the most, they're generally property investors, right? So the fact that location does 80% of the heavy lifting for us is so ingrained in us that it's almost to the point where how can anyone not get this point?
Yeah.
But you get a timely reminder because I've got a client who I'm working with and we give them what's called a blueprint. And that identifies the investment grade suburb first, so they know we're going to buy.
Yep.
And then it's my role as a BA to help them, get them into the right investment grade property. Now, they said, oh, look, I found a property yesterday in the suburb that you're talking about. And I said, great, flick it to me, show me the link. And I've had a look this morning and it's on a really, really busy major road.
Mm.
And he said, look, this one stacks up beautifully. I think it's the one we should go for. And it's interesting that despite some of the information, it's almost like, you know, all the best chefs in the world put all of their information out in cookbooks. We buy these cookbooks, but we still go to their restaurant. It's kind of, it's one thing to hear it.
That's a gold statement, Bryce. Say that again.
Well, it's one thing to hear it, but to be able to execute it is another thing. Because if it was simple as that, restaurants would go out of business, we'd get all of their cookbooks, and we'd just cook it all ourselves at home. And I think that's often a lesson I've got to remind myself, given that I, you know, I'm so immersed in property that I've got to remember that it's not commonplace knowledge. Half the reason for what we're putting this podcast out for, that people get these things.
I've got a similar story. We had a client we did a property investment portfolio plan for. They're doing really well. We bought them the first couple of properties, and then they thought they'll do the next one themselves. And the brief was 6% yield and 5.5% growth or something along those lines. So a bit of a balanced yield type property that we were looking for. I get reports back that I bought a property and I got the yield bit right, but don't know whether I got the growth bit right. So you're sort of thinking, oh no. So it is hard.
It is.
For someone who's a naysay person, so not a naysayer, basically a novice.
Yeah.
It's hard for a novice. You can't teach a novice in 3 hours what it's taken us 15 or 20 years to develop in terms of our skill sets and our understanding and our level of granular knowledge that we have in property investing. So, but that's what this is about. It's, I mean, if anything, if this podcast saves people from making
poor decisions,
just dumb decisions, that would be good, you know, because it's a high value transaction. So if we can stop them from just picking the wrong asset, I mean, you might get a good one or an okay one and you're happy with that, but the real elite outcomes usually come through getting, you know, someone like a buyer's agent to help them buy it.
Yeah, look, as you know, Ben, I've written an article with the help of our team here for the Money magazine. It's going to go out in August. And one of the, it was a case study. I had to do 3 case studies on how someone could create a passive income. And they didn't need to be multimillionaires. They were average people. So we'll let our listeners know when that comes out. But the point in that is one of the scenarios, I had to show a divorcee. A 47-year-old divorcee who wanted to retire on $55,000 passive income with an 18-year-old son and some certain circumstances living in Sydney. Yesterday, I had someone email me and said, I'm a woman who's divorced, who's 47, with an 18-year-old son.
No way.
With an 18-year-old son.
No way.
And I want to create a passive income, and here's the only difference, of $60,000 to $70,000. I thought, phew. Because otherwise, this would have been too close. So that's just amazing that that's the case. But
well, we like to reflect in the stories we tell. They're real life stories. Mm. These are people, we're not making them up. Obviously, in the Money magazine story, we're trying to get a certain demographic type. So those stories are, you know, consistent with the types of people we get to meet. And that's the planning work we do.
It was unbelievable. I even said to this lady, I said, can you believe this? And she just looked at me and well, she didn't look at me while she was on the end of the phone, but she just sort of said, wow, that is spooky. But interesting story about location for her. She has 2 properties already, one in an inner city suburb of Sydney.
Yep.
Bought it in 2001, 1970s block apartment.
Ooh, nice.
It's gone from 310 in 2001 to 700 now. So it's done really, really well.
Happy with those stories.
Second property in Brisbane, I would say well out the skirts of Brisbane, house and land package, bought it in 2006. So here we are 9 years later, worth the same, worth exactly the same amount of money. So if location doesn't do the heavy lifting, these are real life examples where it's happened. So it's not a theory, it's the truth.
And so I reckon that's a great segue into the next one where we're talking about land portion and basically property type. So take that example. In the same time period as your client bought that 70s unit, I bought a single fronted duplex in Alexandria in Sydney for $395,000. I'm getting it valued at the moment, a bank valued at the moment, but I estimate that that's going to come in between $900 and $950.
Lunch is on you.
Yeah, lunch is on me. But there's the science. There's the sign. So she's done well and she's done it by herself. Good job, you know, and I think she'd be happy with those returns, but there's still, you know, potentially $200,000 difference between what she's got and potentially what I've got because I effectively know what I'm doing.
Mm.
So, you know, that's the beauty. And then obviously she didn't know because she went and bought the second one thinking that you replicate it in any type of environment and it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, she was a little disappointed by the second one, and but the good news is she's not going to let it hold her back. But
and she's reaching out for help now, so she's worked it out that you're going to fix her mistake.
Well, that's almost word for word what she said. She, you know, said I got the second one wrong.
Yep.
I don't want to get the third one wrong.
Brilliant,
which is
brilliant.
Nice. So the buyer's decision quadrant is going to be one of four things. You're going to compromise on price, or you're going to compromise on location, or you're going to compromise on land proportion, or you're going to compromise on the quality of dwelling. And that's my definition of saying, are you going to buy something that's really shiny new, or are you going to buy something that's almost knocked over because you're not prepared to compromise on the other three?
Yeah, so let's put the science into a real-life example. Mm-hmm. I'm a family of four. I've got two young kids, and we're looking to buy a property. So we know our budget. We know how desirable location that we want to live, and that desirable location technically may not allow us to get the size that we want. So we've got to make a decision. Certainly it's going to wipe me out of studio apartments, one-bedroom apartments, and potentially even two-bedroom apartments. Now, that's the decision that people have to make all around the world. So then they say, well, if I can't get the type of property that I need with the land, I want to have the backyard for the kids to play on the swings, I want to have that, then ultimately I'm going to compromise on location because, again, you know, the most fixed thing here is usually the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that. Now, some people are going to make that decision to still stay in the right area. So they may go townhouse over house out wide, you know, because they still don't want to give up those lifestyle drivers. So, and I think that'll be the trend in the Australian property market for the next 10 years. And then beyond that 10 years, apartment living and the way in which new developments will occur, they'll start to build better apartments with a broader footprint that are potentially three-bedroom apartments. That's the only solution because land is fully utilised close in.
Mm.
People don't want to compromise on that. So there will be a trend towards potentially apartment living.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously as we become more Asian in the next 10, 15 years and our population continues to swell, they have an acceptance of it. So they don't mind the apartment living. That's all they know. In fact, they actually like the comfort of having people around them, so because that's what they're used to. So we then talk about, so what do we get for our money? So that's the land portion and what type of property, and is that property suitable for our needs? And then, as you say, the final one is the property condition. It's, you know, what does it look like? Is it shiny and bling? And when I walk in the door, do I visualize having the dinner party here? And that, you know, comes back to my status and who I am and what I need and what I'm trying to do, and do I look successful, and also is it in the right area, or is it, you know, a renovate or detonate type property where it is about I can live through this as long as you give me a vision of what it looks like. So remembering, guys, 70% of the marketplace is controlled by owner-occupiers. As investors, we're getting on their coattails. This science of selecting the right property in the right location is a story of understanding what the owner-occupier buyer is looking for, because that's when you get your outperform returns. It's not the other way around. Again, we don't chase investor stock and we don't chase areas where the majority of the stock is owned by investors.
So that's a good point, listeners. You need to really hone in on that. 70% of the market is controlled by owner-occupiers. So therefore, as investors, you're a price taker rather than being a price maker.
Correct.
So therefore, don't try and reinvent the wheel. Find out what the owner-occupiers want in the locations that you've identified as investment grade and let them do all the work, and you just get sucked along in the slipstream from that owner-occupier market. So 70% of the market is controlled by owner-occupiers. Ignore it at your peril.
And so when we then, so as the investor, we're still very focused on that location. In terms of what we need, we're still going to be mindful of the tenant's needs. So, but I would never ever buy a property that's just based on tenant inquiry. I want owner-occupier appeal, as Bryce always, you talk about all the time. So I can still compromise as an investor. So I'll give you an example. I can buy the Ugly Duckling 1970s block and do really well because I get drag up returns or wave riding returns from all of the new shiny bling apartments that are going up. I'm getting critical mass. I'm getting all the lifestyle benefits of having that concentrated population in that area. Or I can potentially equity harvest as well. So I can buy that rundown property and I can renovate it and I can bring it up to what would be the established mark price of that particular location. So there are obviously different strategies as an investor that we can look at to try and make sure that we can get the returns that we're doing. Now, that comes down to whether you want to be an active investor or a passive investor. And when you understand that and what you're interested, how much time you want to put into it, or if you just want to basically sit back and enjoy the ride and get the rental income that's coming through and watch the value of the asset do the heavy lifting as a true investor, that also forms part of this conversation as well.
Interesting, Ben. The 70s apartments versus the 90s apartments. Because I'm looking at hundreds of properties each week and physically walking through scores of them. It's always interesting because I backtest anything that I'm seriously interested in buying. I backtest its performance, so to see how many times it sold prior and what the actual compounding growth rate has been. And you know what? 70s apartments consistently outperform 90s apartments, consistently in Brisbane and in Melbourne. I'm starting to think, why is that? And I think it really comes down to the basics of what the 70s apartments have on offer, because their body corporates are really low. No pool, no caretaker, mm-hmm. no lift.
Yep.
So not only do they have appeal to the investor, but when the owner-occupier is coming along, they're thinking, well, low-body corporates, that's not going to cost me much. I don't actually need the pool, particularly in Melbourne.
Yep.
Versus the 90s apartments, it was kind of that era of, you know, a bit more bling, let's get a gym, a pool, a caretaker, a lift. The body corporates became enormous. So simple things like just how much the cash flow is for the owner-occupier, and we know that, you know, based on your comment, it's 70% of the market's controlled by them. So if the owner-occupier is coming in and going, well, I probably would just choose the one that has slightly less outgoings each year, so therefore that's more in demand for me. Even though intuitively you might think, well, 70s are a bit older, they're a bit more sort of ugly from the street appeal, the 90s stuff's got a bit more fancy balconies, but consistently they underperform compared to the 70s apartments.
And what underpins that, Bryce, is that these properties are in the buy zone or the strike zone of most buyers. In other words, they're more affordable than the 90s or the 2000 apartments, so the newer type apartments. So when you have that more affordability in the right location, you get that competition and you get that emotional result, which basically means you get an outperform return on investment. And over time, over the next 20, 30, 40 years, that older style versus the sort of newisher style, they're both going to be old, you know, so it doesn't really matter. So from a percentage return point of view, you're better off buying the ugly duckling or the 70s brick block as opposed to something that might be a little bit more fancier. As long as the footprint and the floor plan's right. Some of those 70s do have the second bedrooms are a little smaller.
Yep.
So don't just go in there blind.
Yeah.
You know, you want to compare apples with apples in terms of internal floor size. But you're right, you'll get a better return on those assets.
Yeah, you're right. You've still got to unpack it. There's no blanket rule. The 70s don't always do better than the 90s, but as a general rule, and the types that I would consider investment grade, they do. It's also that they've arrived at the party earlier, you know, and 20 years earlier, so they got better positions earlier.
Good point.
And then the 90s, the developers in the 90s
like
go, well,
yeah, that's good.
I have to build on a road, same suburb, but I have to build on a busier road, or I have to build across the road from the train station or whatever. So
things like quieter street.
Yep.
Those
tree line streets.
Yep. Perfect. Yep. You make that's a really good point.
Okay. So there you go, folks. As I say on the show, you are going to compromise in one of four ways, and it's your choice. It's either through the price or the cost of the property, the location, the proportion of land that you want to get, and the quality of the dwelling, or you know what condition the property is actually in. So there you have it, folks. You've probably been rattling these ideas around in the back of your head without some form of framework to sort of herd the cats of your thoughts. But that's what we call the buyer's decision quadrant.
Yep.
And we're going to put that on the website. We've got a picture of the buyer's decision quadrant. So if you go to thepropertycouch.com.au, you can have a bit of a look as to what we're talking about sort of pictorially or, on
graphical
paper,
sense,
graphically.
Yeah.
I was going to say graphical, but it's not necessarily graphical. But whilst you're at thepropertycouch.com, last week we talked about a favour, Ben, and we're still going to talk about this for a couple of weeks because it's really important that if you do go to the if you go to the website and check out that quadrant picture, if you wouldn't mind voting for us in the
Investors Is it under the resources section?
Yes.
So go to the resources section and then basically under the investor choice area, we'd love to have you vote for education content. So that's what we're about. We're passionate about educating you to making smarter decisions with your money and ultimately creating a better wealth outcome for you and your family. So that's a good point.
So if you go to the propertycouch.com.au, choose the Investor's Choice Award. I think it's actually under the episode, you know, last week's episode and this week's episode, so you can check it there. And I also talked about a Money Magazine article that's coming out in August. If you want to see the one that I wrote that was similar on how to create a $2,500 per week passive income, I wrote it 2 years ago with the help of Ben and the team around here. If you're interested in that, we'll put that up as well. So you can download that and have a bit of a read. So there you have it, Ben. We've got through it.
Another week. Some
pretty good stuff there. Any thoughts before we go?
Oh, look, I know there's a lot of questions coming through in our questions, and keep them coming in. They're really important. We're going to jump onto that. We might even, because we're getting so many questions, we might even do a little bonus episode in the next couple of weeks. That we can sort of send out to everyone. But at this stage, thanks for listening. You know, the feedback we're getting is brilliant. We love it. And we're hoping we're adding value to the conversation and to your investment expertise.
There you have it, folks. Now, I did pick up on the fact that Ben was going to be talking at the board tomorrow about negative gearing. So I suspect that I'm going to pick his brain about how that went, and we might even talk about that in next week's podcast. So
the great debate, negative gearing.
The great debate. Now, Ben, I gave you a week. Did you work out how to sign off in Greek?
No. yeah, oh, no, here it is. I'm broke. Shut the doors.
Shut the door, Greece. We're broke. And a special shout out to all of our Greek listeners as well. So,
but
until next week.
Sayonara.
See you, folks.